PM. This is the regular meeting of the City of Morro Bay City Council. This is being held via teleconference. Welcome, and to all those that are with us this evening. Madam Clerk, could you please establish a quorum?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Councilmember Addis?
Here.
Councilmember Davis?
I am present.
Councilmember Heller?
Here.
Councilmember McPherson?
Here.
And Mayor Hedding?
Present. Thank you. We do have a quorum. Let me call the meeting to order. And in recognition of those that have been so greatly harmed by the fires throughout California that are raging, and thinking about those that have lost properties, homes, and maybe even come into harm's way, and also thinking about our responders that, as you know, are working tremendously long hours to try to contain the fires, I'd like in your own way to have us all take a moment of silence and just be thinking about their safety and just hopefully the containment of this disaster. Thank you. And with that, Madam Clerk, if we could have the flag, we'll go ahead and do the Pledge of Allegiance. Ready? Begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Mr. City Attorney, do we have a closed session report this evening?
Good evening, Mr. Mayor. No closed session items to report.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate that. And with that, we will go to Mayor and Councilmember reports and announcements. I'll start with Councilmember McPherson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I don't have any announcements, but I would ask our city manager or our harbor director to give the public some overview of the new RV camping program. I've had a lot of questions directed to me about it, and I would just like them to tell the public.
Great. We'll have that during the city manager report. Okay. And Council Member Heller, please.
Yes, I would just like to thank all the city staff members who have worked so hard with the influx of visitors. You know, when it's 115, 120 inland, everybody's going to go to the coast, and seems like everybody has gone to the coast and been here. I'd like to thank all the Harbor Patrol staff, the police department, fire department, city staff, city manager and his crew, all scrambling to adjust to new conditions, which we've never experienced before, and we're in uncharted waters to a certain extent. And I think all things considered, the city and its staff has done a good job responding quickly to these new conditions. And I just wanted to thank you all for your efforts. That's all.
Thank you for that. And Councilmember Addis, please.
I would like to echo Councilmember Heller's sentiments and just share my gratitude with Morro Bay's essential workers, also with the firefighters across the state. I know that there's almost nobody across California now that hasn't been touched by these wildfires, whether it's the smoke and ash right now today in Morro Bay, or a personal friend or relative who's being affected by the fires, or somebody that we know that is out fighting the fires. So my deep gratitude to those that are serving this effort.
Thank you for that. Councilmember Davis, please.
Yes, and I want to thank staff. They work above and beyond every weekend for us. And tonight, I want to recognize one of Morro Bay's special citizens, Jeff Eccles, for the many contributions that he makes to our city. Jeff has a long history of civic involvement in Morro Bay. He's been a board member and president of the Community Foundation of Estero Bay. He's coached basketball and soccer in our local recreation leagues. He is currently serving on the Chamber of Commerce Board of Directors and the Governmental Affairs Committee. He's also a licensed sea captain, and he pilots the Chablis on local harbor cruises. And he's a small business owner down on the waterfront, Morro Bay House of Jerky, home of chocolate-covered bacon. So thank you, Jeff, for your support of our city and our young people. And Mrs. Councilmember Davis asked me to make an announcement tonight about what we have observed in North Morro Bay. Streets are clean and nice, and we never see trash on the beach. We talked to the park rangers at Morro Strand Campground about why do the dumpsters fill up with trash when the campground is closed. And the answer is that people who use the beach bring their bags of trash into the campground, put them into the dumpsters. Park maintenance employees also patrol the beach, and they pick up trash and bring it to the dumpsters. And even folks in the neighborhood in the beach tract area go down onto the beach with buckets and bags and pick up trash and deposit it into the dumpsters. Then Morro Bay garbage trucks come by the campground twice a week and empty the dumpsters. So Mrs. Davis asked me to give a big shout out to all the nice people who are picking up trash and keeping our streets and beaches clean in North Morro Bay. And a reminder that September is the City of Morro Bay Peace and Nonviolence Month, and September 21st of each year is the City of Morro Bay Day of Peace. And last item, I will have office hours this coming Saturday at an outdoor bench near the giant chessboard from 9 until 10 after I do my normal trash pickup at the Centennial Parkway. So everyone is welcome to come by. We can talk about anything you want to talk about. Please wear a face covering. And that's all for me tonight, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you all for those recognitions and reports. I did a video for the city, I believe it was last week, on our not only our Trash Hero program, but also our Mask Hero program. Specifically last week, I received an email from one of our citizens indicating that I was wearing a mask that wasn't approved by the CDC as safe for social distancing and decreasing respiratory environs. And the mask that I was wearing is an aeration mask, but it also has a closure device. My mask was closed, but I do want to just call it out because I don't want to have the public think that it's okay to wear masks that have the breathing devices on either side. Some are made with closures. Others are not. Certainly, if you are unable to social distance and the closure is not closed, those devices are not recommended by the CDC as being safe in terms of contaminating others. So I wanted to just apologize if I appeared to be doing something inappropriate, but let the public know specifically that those types of masks are not recommended. Thank you. With that, we will go to City Manager Report, Mr. Collins.
Thank you, Mayor, Council, and members of the public watching tonight or in the future. Just wanted to echo comments made by the council members. Grateful for the hard work of staff to plan and execute on the plan for what was an extremely busy weekend. We know there were impacts to residents, and the residents have been extremely patient through a very trying and challenging summer, whether it's restrooms or trash or just the sheer number of folks coming to town when we're in the middle of a pandemic. So we just want to extend our thanks to the community, especially those who have come out throughout the summer to pick up trash alongside our maintenance staff. They've made a huge impact in keeping our community clean. Also want to touch upon the new trial trial RV paid parking program. We want to make sure community members understand sort of the origin of that and the purpose. Certainly seems counterintuitive to launch a program that seemingly is encouraging people to come to town when we're in the middle of a pandemic. Totally understand that perspective. So just a little bit of background on that. There are two main issues really here. One is the illegal RV camping that's taking place, and the other is long-term financial sustainability for our harbor department. On the illegal RV front, RV camping front, that has been an issue in the city of Morro Bay, but just like everything else with COVID, it seems to have exacerbated all issues, including those coming to town illegally, or parking illegally, I should say, and sleeping overnight in RVs. I think part of that issue is driven by state parks being closed, the fact that a lot more people are buying RVs, as it seemed to be a safe traveling mechanism. To get out of town to areas that are maybe seen as affordable as people aren't flying to other destinations. So what we're experiencing are a lot of people parking at the Rock Lot or the Pit parking lot or other neighborhood parking areas, bringing the impact and not really paying for that impact, if you will, like folks who, you know, traveled to our hotels or vacation rentals. So we, City Council has tried to address that by increasing the fines for overnight parking from $50 to $250. And the other approach to that is creating safe parking in places where there are not impacts on neighbors and limits the impact on those popular areas like the Rock and Pit parking lots. So the city has approved 19 total spaces, which will put folks in three locations in the waterfront area where they have to abide by strict rules and regulations for their behavior, and also account for trash and restroom service so that we're not impacting the existing trash and restroom capacity issues that folks have identified. In talking with SLO County Public Health, small group and family outdoor activity, which RV camping largely is, has not been a contributing factor to the spread of COVID-19. And the other side of the house is that the Harbor Department has been struggling to be self-supporting financially, and the Harbor Advisory Board, as well as City Council, has taken this issue up for quite some time to figure out different ways of improving that situation. And RV camping program has been one of those ideas discussed for over a year now. And so those two forces have really brought forward this program on a trial basis only, approved by the Coastal Commission for a short period of time for us to assess how this works. And if we find that the impacts to the neighbors or just the general impacts to our community are significant, that'll be a very important finding for City Council when we reconsider this in a few months. We would have to, in order to get this to be a permanent program, go through council as well as the Coastal Commission, because we would need a coastal development permit. And Coastal Commission has their own environmental review process to ensure that we are not creating impacts on the local environment. So we, again, are approaching this from a pragmatic standpoint, again, to try to help address the illegal parking issue as well as a revenue shortfall in the Harbor Department. And the Harbor Department is a key contributor to ensuring that we have a safe and clean waterfront environment for visitors and our community members. So we will do our due diligence to ensure that those who travel to our parking areas are safe and conduct themselves in good behavior, and it will address any issues that crop up, and then take data down and report back to council in several months to see if we want to move forward or cease the program. Thank you.
Thank you, Scott. Thanks for the comprehensive update on the RV parking program. And we'll most likely ask you to check in maybe every council meeting and just give us a few words about how it's going. Thank you so much. With that, we do have a presentation this evening. This is a presentation of the Business Heroes Award Program. And I believe I'm going to be turning it over to Mr. Scott Graham, our Development Director. Mr. Graham. Scott? Scott? Scott Graham?
I can't hear you, Scott.
Unmute yourself, Scott, perhaps.
Mayor, if I may, I know that Zoom has been having some issues with sound quality, which is why I asked for a sound check for myself at the beginning. Some folks have dealt with that by calling in or joining the Zoom via the phone number as opposed to audio. What happens is people unmute themselves and then no sound plays.
Thank you. I had the problem early on as I first signed on as well. I assume Mr. Collins. Yes, we can hear you. Mr. Graham.
It defaulted my microphone. Something must have changed, but I switched it back, so it sounds like it's working now. Sorry about that.
Welcome.
Yeah, so I'm pleased to get to announce the launching of our Business Hero campaign. I think you're all familiar with the Mask Hero campaign and the Trash Hero campaign. Those have been successful for the city in getting the word out. This is obviously something slightly different. It's allows us to recognize the resiliency of our business community. It's a way of thanking them and recognizing what they're going through and trying to continue to provide services to our community, sort of recognizing the hardships they also face in operating under the restrictions related to COVID-19, and it's a way to recognize them and letting our business community know that we see what they're doing. We appreciate them for keeping us safe, while also being able to be flexible to address, changes in the orders that are coming down from the state for operational requirements for our different business groups. The idea is that each month we would come forward with four different businesses, one each from our four commercial districts, so Waterfront, Downtown, North Main, and Quintana. So our first four business heroes of the program are the Avocado Shack at 2190 North Main, Fitness Works at 500 Quintana, Top Dog at 857 Main, and the Galley Restaurant at 899 Embarcadero. We did shoot a brief video at each of these locations as we handed out the signs to each business owner. And I would like to play the video for you. But before I do that, I'd like to first thank Amy Watkins, our police commander, for putting the video together and shooting the video. And I'd also like to thank Heather Barbas, the graphic designer who put the signs together at no charge to the city. So thank you, Heather. With that, I'm going to share my screen and play the video.
We're kicking off our Business Hero program for the city, and we're picking businesses out in the four economic sectors in town, and you're our first one down on the waterfront, Dave, to the galley. We're sort of recognizing, what it's like doing business, underneath the current climate, with COVID-19 and what it's forced you to do. I mean, you've created this whole outdoor seating area. I mean, definitely going above and beyond to continue operation in our city and serving our visitors and residents alike. And we just appreciate all that you've done to this point and continuing to operate in town. And you're definitely one of our business heroes.
Great. Thank you. So
at this, I will be bringing you a more permanent sign plaque later on. But this is kind of the kickoff to our program, and you're one of the first ones down on the waterfront.
Thank you, Seth. We really appreciate it. We're really fortunate to be part of this community. We're fortunate to work with such a great crew. As you know, in the last few months, we've had to lay them off and hire them back all twice. And in both cases, nearly all of our crew has come back to work for us. We're all enjoying our time out here on the new patio. We hope at some point we're able to work back inside a little bit as well. But for now, this is working, and it's just great to be part of this community. And thank you for all your help. The city's been wonderful in helping us adapt and helping us work through the regulations and create outdoor spaces like this.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Dave.
We'll request that to you, but again, we appreciate all that you're doing in Morro Bay. Should they keep it up? And here's the sign again. Thank you so much for what you do.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks. That's very cool. Thank you, guys. Thanks for thinking of us. It's been tough. It's been a long 7 months.
Yeah.
But we're hanging in there, and if it wasn't for our awesome customers, we wouldn't have been able to do it. So our customers have truly kept us alive through all of this. So thank you.
Yeah, we appreciate all that you do.
Thanks very much.
Fantastic that the way we're able to pivot and, you know, to address the impacts from COVID-19. I mean, you've been on the phone with us and calling us and emailing us about options, about, you know, setting up in the parking lot and offering your classes in the parks and, you know, and then with the seat training container out front with the cardio equipment in. I mean, just thinking outside the box, it's amazing.
I was actually thinking inside the box.
One of our business heroes. Anyway, to give that to you, and just recognize, you know, the amount of effort you guys have put out there. We really appreciate it, serving our community.
We appreciate it.
Also the tough part, right?
We appreciate the partnership, too. You've really helped us out. Facilities.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, you guys were on it from the beginning, so it was nice. They put a lot of effort forward to address the impacts of COVID-19 and being required then to operate outside. I mean, it's kind of amazing, you know, how quickly you've got
program, sort of in recognition of, you know, the difficult time you have to operate in now, you know, with the ever-changing guidelines of the states, and you have to be outside, and you're relatively new business, and you actually had to move, you know, right down the street from here, so you have all that kind of going on at one time, and we certainly appreciate the perseverance that you had in continuing to operate. You've been well embraced by our community. You're nothing but good things about the business, and we really appreciate that you're continuing to operate and have expanded the overall kind of concept of what you're doing, and especially expansion during this time frame is kind of amazing to me. And I wanted to give you this is sort of the temporary thing. We actually have a metal plaque that we're going to be giving you, but they just weren't ready yet. But this is great, something you can put in the window or whatever. And again, we just really appreciate you continuing to do business in Morro Bay, serving our folks, serving our citizens.
Well, I appreciate it. It has been a challenge, just that we don't want anyone to wear a mask in it. It's a little confidential sometimes, but we're not good for people. I'm not going to do the transplants coming from chemo bags, all of that stuff. And, you know, they deserve their respect. But I'll tell you what, people have been, overall, the distance here, just kindness has come out. My son and I have just witnessed this, and it's what we're about, right? Now, we're from Cambria, so our thing is paid for. Ask, do something kind. We're just trying to keep that going out there. In these times, we really have to do that. We're seeing how much fun we really want to do. I'm honored to have a business.
That's great. Like I said, you've been, everything I've heard, it's been all positives for your business and the expansion of the move, even. Pretty great. So, yeah, we appreciate what you do. And just a little bit of recognition on that side of things. So,
thank you.
Yeah.
There you go.
Okay, well, there you go. Certainly, if the council has any questions or would like to ask me anything about the program, please feel free.
Well, first of all, Scott, great job, and congratulations to the Avocado Shack, Fitness Works, Top Dog, and the Galley Restaurant as our first four businesses being recognized. Thanks for going out and did it. Any question, council members?
No questions, but I like the concept. Good for you, Scott.
Any questions or comments?
Yeah, I just want to say that these are all businesses with whom we have worked city staff and city government to try to make the best possible business environment under the restrictions that we have. And this is just a great recognition of a partnership between the business community and our city government. So thank you, Scott Graham, for doing this. Thank you, Scott Collins. And thank you, Heather Barbas, for a great logo.
Okay, and Scott, I also wanted to just offer my thanks to you. I know that you went to bat with Coastal to get these businesses up and going again in very difficult times. I know you worked expeditiously with the council in order to get ordinances passed to allow them to continue to do business, and I just appreciate your leadership in that and working to help our businesses be successful.
Certainly.
All right. With that, I will go ahead and move us to public comment. This is general public comment for items either on the agenda for which you cannot stay or items not on the agenda that you'd like to speak to. Pursuant to Section 3 of Executive Order N29-20, issued by Governor Newsom on March 17th, 2020. This meeting will be conducted telephonically through Zoom and broadcast live on cable channel 20 and streamed on the city website. Please be advised that pursuant to the executive order and to ensure the health and safety of the public by limiting human contact that could spread COVID-19 virus, the Veterans Hall will not be open for this or other meetings in the future. So with that, we do have Peter Williamson, and I'll ask Zeke if you could have Peter Williamson up first. Peter is with SLOCOG, San Luis Obispo County of Governments, and he has a special presentation during this time, and I believe you have some slides. So welcome, Peter.
Good evening, Mayor Hedding. Good to see the Morro Bay crew again. It's been a while. We took advantage of the virtual council meeting to send me to Morro Bay for once instead of Catalina. So my name is Peter. I'm with SLOCOG, which is the Council of Governments, our region's agency responsible for transportation planning and funding. Much like this virtual city council, we have a pretty different thing going on for the fall in place of our usual rideshare week. So announcing pavement to parks. There we go. See if I can navigate that. And this will celebrate the underutilized public space right now. The silver lining of this pandemic is that we have pocket parklets popping up all over the county. And it's actually a pretty good segue from Scott's presentation, because we do have some resources for businesses to support them during this challenging time. And so actually, I noted the gym is a perfect candidate for this. Here's a picture from Cambria. Most of our businesses, you know, might be expanding to these areas out of necessity. Like the gym mentioned, we're seeing a lot of voluntary implementations as well that allow for safe business, socializing, dining, much more. I had my annual review in a parklet, so anything's possible. So far, we invite you to patron Dark Nectar in Morro Bay. Just confirm that. If we reach out to the gym, that's perfect. Any business that's taken up a parking space to do their business outdoors, that's perfect. And we also have a lot of locations throughout the county in Cambria, Slo, Paso, and Rio Grande. You can get the full list at rideshare.org/park. The participation for community members is really easy, or visitors anytime from now through October 9th. You can stop by any of your favorite locations, scan the QR code on your iPhone camera or your QR app. Each time you scan, you'll be able to rate the parklet and enter to win $100 gift cards at any of those locations. Some of the fancier parklets probably make you think of a cafe in Europe. We have some pretty cool spaces emerging. So for that reason, we encourage you to get on social media and take pictures of your experiences in these outdoor spaces. and we'll have additional prizes for that as well. And so one of the cool things that we're doing is providing sponsorship for businesses up to $300. So like if that gym wanted to add some trees and stuff around that parking area, they could do that. And we would reimburse up to $300 for lighting, for a restaurant, for example. So all sorts of different applications. If you're on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter, you can use the hashtag Parkslow County for chances to win additional prizes. And we want to see how you use that space to dine, relax, and conduct business. So maybe you can stage something that looks like that. And as mentioned, we have sponsorship money. And the participating parklets get a chance to get voted best parklet, best place to work. These five categories here. The best parklet will win $1,000 to improve their outdoor space, and the other parklets can win $300 additional to continue improving their space as well. And big thanks to our sponsors that you can see here, and also the participating locations. So Morro Bay, Dark Nectar, thank you. And also, before I tune out, I'll mention our Walk to School Day. We're doing a virtual event this year, and we've already confirmed Del Mar and Morro Bay High School. And basically what that will be is during PE classes, it'll be a promotion of active transportation. We have an optional assignments where students can enter to win a bike. And so, yeah, keep an eye out for that during your regularly scheduled virtual PE programming. And that's it for me. Any questions from the council? I'm not sure, since this is now public comment, if that works or not.
Hey, Peter, thank you. And I'm just wondering what the criteria are for best place to chill.
That would be, a spot where you'd maybe just find a nice outdoor couch. I don't know. It's a spot where you can hang out outside with your friends, your family, your quarantine.
Or get your evaluation done.
Get your evaluation done. That's right. Hopefully it goes well for you.
Fantastic. Appreciate the presentation. Any quick questions from council members for Peter? Hearing none. Peter, thank you so much. Appreciate you being here this evening. And please say hello to Pete for me and everybody at SlowCog.
Will
do. Appreciate your work. Okay. Have a good evening. So general public comment is open. You can access via Zoom or by telephone. Please don't forget to use the raise hand button in order to, and there we are, there's our public comment information. Raise hand button if you want to speak. Zeke, let's go ahead and open up public comment. Anybody in the queue, sir?
Yes, sir, Mr. Mayor. First in the queue with their hand raised is Don. Don, you are online. Don, your microphone is still muted. You are online. If you unmute your microphone, we can hear you.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Welcome.
Well, thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. I am Don Maruska. For over 26 years, I've had my office here in Morro Bay. As an entrepreneur and master certified coach, I've helped cities in this county and across California and the nation apply best practices and thrive. So I've seen what it takes for a city to be high performing, especially in difficult circumstances like we face. And so from my background, I want to share some perspectives about Morro Bay's finances and the proposed 1 cent sales tax measure. First thing I'd like to highlight is the city of Morro Bay operates a full-service city on a shoestring. It's undertaking a major water reclamation project, a general plan update, harbor maintenance needs, and a host of other challenges with a lean team. Any one of these challenges would be a major undertaking for a city of Morro Bay size, but Morro Bay is facing these and other needs all at the same time. So citizens should recall that the city of Morro Bay actually incorporated with the boost of revenues from the Morro Bay power plant. Had that not occurred, Morro Bay would be in a place like Los Osos, which has a much larger population, 50% larger population, population, but basically a residential base and unable to be an independent city. So now with the power plant funding gone, even a lean, high-performing organization like Morro Bay's that has already tightened its belt can't continue to deliver the services that residents and businesses have come to expect without having more revenues. So in that regard, the 1% sales tax increase is a fair and equitable way to provide needed revenues. The 1 cent increase in sales tax will put Morro Bay on par with the proposed rates for other cities. And importantly, visitors will account for 70% of the sales tax paid. So locals like us will have our sales taxes matched more than two times over by payments from visitors. And that would help address one of the topics that came up in the description from the city manager tonight of all the challenges that our day visitors place on the city. Those day visitors that don't stay overnight are nonetheless buying things and buying and participating in the local economy. And the sales tax would help pick that up. And furthermore, essentials like food and healthcare services are not subject to the sales tax, which is an important consideration for residents on fixed incomes. So yes, this is a difficult time for many. That's why it's especially important to rally together and enable the city to thrive and help us thrive in safety and support for our homes, our workplaces, and community activities. So I hope voters will take pride in a city well-run and support the 1 cent sales tax increase to keep Morro Bay a great place to live and work. And I thank the council and the city employees for all their work to bring about the environment and community that we enjoy. And thank you for this opportunity to comment.
Thank you, Don. Zeke, next public comment.
Yes, sir. Next up is John Weiss.
Thank you, Council and Mayor.
Welcome, John.
And thank you. I hope you can hear me okay.
Yes, you're coming loud and clear.
Okay, very good. Well, again, thank you, Mayor, Council, and staff and citizens. First of all, I want to express my gratitude to Don Maruska and his comments. I do respectfully disagree with him. I do think that we can live within our means, and I do believe it requires a tightening of our belt. But again, I do respect those who support the 1% tax. I respect Jody Cox and our fire chief very much for the work they do, and I support public safety. That isn't the reason I called in at the public comment. There's a couple other things I wanted to mention while I have a few moments. There's a lot of pushback on the vacation rentals, and I believe that, and I have sat in and listened to the Planning Commission and the TBID, and I agree largely with what they support, and I think a reduction of vacation rentals and recognition of our hotels and motels that are struggling. And also, I've heard a lot of pushback about the RVs, which I understand Scott Collins' comments about the serious issues going on with the harbor, but I also believe that we may have other options that would address that. And for the 19 spaces, I think we are kind of shooting ourselves in the foot. That said, my real reason for calling is zoning and affordable housing. And I want to use an example of 745 Harbor. It's zone ZO S4, I believe, which means it requires office and housing. And I was recently speaking to somebody who was looking to develop that property, but was told by the city that they couldn't do it because they didn't want to or couldn't feel it would pencil out to put office space there. So I would ask the council to consider zoning in commercial areas where housing is being offered for affordability. Because we have a serious housing shortage for those who would like to work and live here and are unable to do so because of the high cost. I also believe that the vacation rentals, while they're great for the owners of those vacation rentals, and I appreciate that. If they were permanent rent residential, in those cases, they would allow more residents to live locally. So I want to ask you to have a great meeting, and thank you very much.
Thank you, John. Zeke, next public comment, please.
Yes, sir. Next up is Betty Winholt.
This is Betty.
Welcome, Betty.
I want to touch on a few things. The first one is on item C2, which has to do with the Cerrito Peak amendment. And I understand that you won't change this, but for the record, I think it's important to note that the price of the peak was $350,000, and that's what should be in the recitals rather than the $265,000 that you've put in there. Second, I appreciate that the city manager included the Harbor Advisory Board in the discussions of camping on the Embarcadero, but my memory is that the Harbor Board was against that. And I just, unless you know something I don't, I think it's important to note that the Advisory Board was not in favor of it. I'm curious to know, in light of the tightening of our belt, where the funding for the placards for the businesses, I understand this is good for morale, but also the hats and the t-shirts for all the different heroes that the city's coming up with. Is that coming out of the general fund, or where is the money coming from for these incidental things that are being passed around? And I'm going to agree with Mr. Weiss that while Mr. Marusco is a long-term resident, as we are, as I am, as he is, I will also respectfully disagree and believe that we should not pass the 1 cent, 1% sales tax. Thank you.
Thank you, Betty. Zeke, next for public comment, please.
Yes, sir. Caller with the number ending in 327, you are on the air.
Hello?
Dan, welcome. We can hear you.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Mayor, Council, and staff. I wanted to address Mr. Marusco's comments on the 1 cent sales, the 1% sales tax. This tax is a regressive tax that hurts our lowest income earners, those that can least afford to pay. The city has primarily made temporary and or short-term cuts instead of making permanent cuts, which needs to be undertaken prior to taxing its citizens. I reviewed the consultant's assessment that the 1% sales tax is paid 70% by tourists. I did not see any science in that assessment. It is their, I guess, professional guess. However, I did not see any science noted in that guesstimate, and I do not believe that it is paid 70% by tourists. This is being floated around, and I don't think that it has merit. In regards to the overnight parking of the 19 paid RV spaces, camping spaces, the citizens of Morro Bay have been awakened on this subject, and the subject has gone viral and by Morro Bay citizens objecting to this program on social media. I fully agree with their rationale and objections. It encourages people to camp in Morro Bay during the COVID-19 virus, when the city otherwise says it is not encouraging visitors due to the virus in order to protect our own citizens. The state campground closed to protect against the COVID-19 virus. On this basis alone, the program makes zero sense. Dry camping in those 19 slots with no amenities increases the likelihood of even more trash left out. The trash issue has become a pandemic-like issue of its own. Lastly, the RV camping cheapens the visual aesthetics of Morro Bay around our rock and Embarcadero. This is a negative aspect for citizens and visitors alike. In conclusion, for the minimal income, the negativity of this program The program is not worth pursuing, and I adamantly object, and so do so many citizens in our town. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Dan. Zeke, next public comment, please.
At this time, Mr. Mayor, there is nobody else in the queue with their hands raised.
Okay. Thank you for that public comment. With that, I will bring it back to council. And just a couple of follow-up questions maybe for some staff members with regard to some of the comments that were made regarding the sales tax initiative and concerns about the city tightening its belt. Collins, can you review for us the cuts that were made in terms of FTEs or full-time equivalent employees or layoffs and the total dollar amount that was cut from both the operational budget?
Yeah, overall, we basically were short about $3 million for this fiscal year. The caller's right. Some of those expenses reductions could be deemed temporary, but most of them are permanent. Pay reductions, general fund reserves are more than temporary, potentially. But we laid off a significant number of staff members, and we went down from about 98 FTE down to about 89 in the course of a few months. And most of those positions likely are never coming back. What we're looking at is how to address the emergency reserves moving forward. If the situation doesn't improve, even if it does, we may run out of emergency reserves funds in the long term. So we have cut back travel and training expenses and really scrutinized all of our other expenses that are non-personnel. Some of those simply won't be coming back. And we have experienced some of the impacts, especially in consolidated maintenance, of those cuts being made. And I've heard from community members about those service impacts. And we try to, without making excuses, just say we are operating with less. And that's also true in our planning department, which is responsible for issuing permits for housing and commercial development as well. So we are operating with less, and that will be the mantra for quite some time.
And just to readdress the comment where one caller didn't believe the figure that approximately 70% of our tourists pay for sales tax, could you or Ms. Calloway reiterate where the data was, where that came from?
Sure, certainly. Our sales tax consultant did a analysis looking at, zip code or area code, one of the two, on purchases made. And based on that analysis, I think it's 70% of the business-to-consumer sales tax that is paid in our community, which is the sales tax that most residents would come to understand, where you make it. And when you pay it at the teller, whether you're buying goods or in a retail shop or purchasing food at a restaurant, that's where you see that sales tax. So 70% of that business consumer sales tax is paid by folks who do not live in Morro Bay. Jen can probably add more to that if I missed anything.
Any comments,
Miss?
Thanks, Jen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you covered it. Everything well, Scott. The HDL is our sales tax consultant, and they perform these studies throughout the state for their clients that request them. So it's a methodology that they have and they use, and it's consistent with what they do for other cities.
Thank you. And either Mr. Collins or perhaps if Mr. Endersby is there, one of the callers indicated that and it was her understanding that the Harbor Advisory Board did not support RV parking. Just wanted to get an update.
Yeah, so Eric corrected me. It wasn't a unanimous vote, although I don't think I said that. There was support from HAB. The HAB did not support, majority did not support RV camping at the Rock. And this trial basis or trial program does not contemplate using the Rock for RV camping.
thanks for that update. And then lastly, a comment on the costs associated with the placards and or plaques for the hero programs or the T-shirts or the swag, as we call it. Could you possibly comment on cost versus potential return on investment?
Yeah, I don't have the exact figures, and some of it may be recouped through CARES Act funding because it's related to the pandemic. We are certainly doing our best to address impacts related to trash, which is being driven by COVID. Increased travelers only because people are traveling basically the coast and the mountain areas and to exclusion of everywhere else mostly. And the dining out is pretty much the only option in most cases for folks to consume food, which means our trash is being impacted, and those are directly related to COVID. In addition, the state has ordered that folks wear masks where they can't socially distance in public. And while we certainly hope that people do the right thing, we have police officers to try to ensure that occurs, but we have limited police resources, and they have to respond to all calls for service, so they can't be out there necessarily policing who's wearing a mask or not. So we are trying to use the power of persuasion and positive campaigning through the Mask Hero program to encourage people to do the right thing, and I think we have seen an attendant response from the limited investment we have made in those materials. And we do want to again thank Heather Barbas for her tremendous support in providing free design services to the city, which would normally cost hundreds if not thousands of dollars. So we are trying to do most of this on our own, but certainly there are printing costs, which I think Jen can discuss in more detail.
Yeah, so we have been tracking everything COVID related, which is all of the hero campaign series is falling under that, and submitting for reimbursement either through FEMA or CARES Act money. We have not heard if FEMA's reimbursing for these costs yet. They've sent back some additional documentation requirements and explanations, but we also have economic development funds that we need to use and report out on, and that was money that was going to be directed towards the temporary one-lane closure on the Embarcadero. So should FEMA not reimburse or CARES Act not reimburse for the swag items, if you will, we would be allocating economic development funds to support those. It's not our intention to use general fund money, understanding where we are with our general fund and economic position.
Thank you, Jen, for that update. And Chris, if you'll make a note, Ms. Winholtz brought up the issue of item C2 and the pricing. The city paid $350,000 versus $265,000. I'll just ask you not to comment now, but if you make a note to be sure to cover that in detail again so that that is clear for our public. And pardon me?
Will do.
Oh, thank you. Okay. Appreciate that. And with that, thank you for that public comment. I'll move us to item A, the consent agenda. I will open public comment. This is public comment for item A, any consent item. Zeke, do we have any callers?
No, sir, Mr. Mayor. We do not have any callers at this time.
Okay, no callers. With that, I will bring it back to council and either seek approval or if you have any items you wish to pull, let me know.
I will move to approve the consent agenda.
I will second.
Motion by Councilmember Davis to approve items A1 through A4, second by Councilmember McPherson. Any further discussion? Hearing none, call for a roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Davis?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
Councilmember Addis?
Yes.
Councilmember Heller?
Yes.
And Mayor Heading?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Thank you. And that brings us to item C-1. These are our business items. C-1 is the Tourism Stakeholder Group Report and Recommendations Regarding Direction and Management of the Tourism Marketing Functions in Morro Bay. And I'll turn it over to Mr. Collins for this report. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. I will share my screen. One moment. All right. Can you see it okay?
Indeed.
All right. Fantastic. Okay. Jumping to, should be a short presentation and provide plenty of opportunity for public comment and questions from council members and discussion. I also have Chuck Davison, CEO of Visit SoCal, on the line with us as well to answer questions as he helped participate in this tourism stakeholder group and has a lot of experience in what we're discussing tonight. Just so everybody's kind of caught up to speed, we obviously have talked about COVID-19 tonight and pretty much every meeting that's preceded this one back to March. COVID-19 impacts have been significant in the tourism marketing space for Morro Bay and pretty much everywhere else. We are not marketing or doing paid marketing at this time. And with that in mind, we have cut our staff from was normally one full-time and two part-times down just to one part-time staff member. And we face significant uncertainties, mainly related to, you know, what's going to happen with COVID-19 and when is the appropriate time to consider marketing and what does that even look like? So there's a lot of things that are sort of scary in thinking about this and when do we kind of get back on the saddle and when does that make sense and what does that look like? But in addition to that, there's the flip side of that, which is this presents a significant opportunity since we're not really moving forward this time to take stock of where we're at and really evaluate our vision, the strategies to achieve that vision, and the tactics on the ground and organizational structure for that matter. We really haven't done something like that in several years. So in the last several months, we've discussed this at the TBID advisory board level and with city council to take advantage of this opportunity to really assess how we're doing and how to move forward, and formed a stakeholder group to review those opportunities, myself included. Participated in a stakeholder group that includes Chuck Davison, CEO, as well as Derek Kirk, who works for Visit SoCal, Joan Solu, who's a TBID board community member, Amit Patel, who's a hotel operator locally, as well as a Visit SoCal board member, Dave Peter, a restaurateur, who was on this meeting earlier tonight, as a Morro Bay business hero, and then Steve Allen, TBID chair and hotel owner, Terry Ennis, who's our TBID, sorry, not chair, but she's an STR owner operator representative for TBID, Stephen Pack, who's the chamber board president, and Maggie Jurin, who's a STR owner operator and was on the TBID in the past. So the process included meeting five times. We were facilitated by Kathleen Markov. We met five times over the course of June and July this year. We reviewed material kind of on our existing TBID and the formation of the current format that we deliver marketing services, and looked at best practices outside of Morro Bay and engaged in surveying amongst the group and deliberated on several key important topics, including how we're doing, what we should continue doing in the future, what we should stop doing, and the things we should start doing, and really kind of pointing towards our hopes and aspirations. And when do we market again and how would we know we're achieving success? Pretty fundamental stuff. So through that process, the group coalesced around three major recommendations, and they sort of sync together in a holistic approach. One is that this has definitely been spotlighted this summer with a lot of day trippers, and sort of gets us to a level of sort of questioning, what our strategy in the past has delivered. And we really do need to think about how we diversify our visitation. We are a charming, beautiful, and unique destination that is authentic in experience in many ways. That's a thing we can claim to and actually believe and know it's true, where a lot of other other destinations may claim that, but they can't hold that. We hold that space, and that's a key asset to us being a likable and place where people want to visit in the future. However, we're also known as a low-cost and affordable destination primarily, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but, you know, it doesn't definitely open the doors for more diverse visitorship. So diverse visitation has a cascading benefit effect from our research. You know, if a higher dollar traveler comes to town, maybe they can take the space of two travelers and still have the same amount of spend, so there isn't as much of an impact on our community, which leads to more revenue for the businesses that they, you know, they shop at, or the hotels or vacation rentals they stay in, as well as more revenues to other related industries as well as to the city. But this requires a commitment both from the public side and the private sector. From the public side, that's public infrastructure and services. We certainly have seen the need for increased capacity for the basics like restroom and trash service, which is also being experienced in other coastal communities at this time, but also private investment in existing businesses as well as new developments. This obviously is something that takes time, and you don't want a rapid change. You don't want to lose the very character that is desirable for our community members in the process. So it's a balance that has to be struck. It requires collaboration from the key industries, not just hotels and vacation rentals, but also restaurants and retail, as well as support from the community for those investments. If our community doesn't buy into this, we're really just spinning our wheels and wasting our time. And obviously that's a challenge right now with COVID-19, everybody feeling the effects of that and concerns about too many visitors in town. And we need a new approach to marketing. We need to take the long view and build upon previous marketing efforts to connect to new visitors so that we improve that diversification. With that in mind, thinking about the long view, the group also recommends converting from the 1989 law to the 1994 law. Currently under the 1989 law, for business improvement districts, you have to go out and get approval for that assessment year after year on the same process. Stop everything what you're doing in March, go through the protest process, get your assessment going again in July. And there are a lot of start and stops, and it sort of forces a short-term view, a short-term horizon on kind of your strategy and tactics. Alternatively, the 1994 law, which the county operates under with Visit SoCal as well as the city of Paso, it's a five-year assessment period, so you need to get approval once for 5 years. So it provides that long-term horizon. And what's different from 1989 law is that with this one, you actually have to get an affirmative vote from 50% of the revenue generation in whoever you're assessing, in this case, vacation rentals and hotel and motel operators. And the third and final recommendation is to transition to a nonprofit board. The city currently oversees the day-to-day oversight of the tourism marketing function, and that has provided stability because we're a larger organization that has a lot of different lines of business, and we have administration that can help assist in those efforts and endeavors, and it can connect to other economic development strategies in the city. It is heavy on process, though, of course, since we are a government entity. A lot of checks and balances, which can be a good thing, but also can create hindrances to moving quickly to changing scenarios and situations in the industry. The group, based on their review of a lot of different models and discussions internally, recommends transitioning that day-to-day function and oversight to a nonprofit board of lodging, primarily of lodging representatives. The key here being is to have the voice of the industry predominantly on the board and accountability for delivering results. There's a belief that this will provide greater flexibility that's currently available to the organization with the city oversight. But there's also a key critical understanding that the city must maintain a supporting and advisory role because we are so connected to the success of tourism, and also our community needs to have that input in that process. Otherwise, we're completely disconnected and working at odds from one another. So there is definitely a role for the city, but perhaps not in the leadership role. Based on that, formulated recommendations were brought to TBID, and TBID did move forward those recommendations. Included in that is using Tourism Business Improvement District assessment funds, not general funds, but TBID funds, to help support the services to do this transition. There are a lot of nuts and bolts and moving pieces to move from the 89 law to the 94 law, as well as stand up a nonprofit board and go through all the machinations to get that up and running. And the idea here is that we do all this simultaneously while we're still in the existing 1989 law, where we're sort of holding pat right now, and then do the transition fully in July of next year. That allows us the time to go through this process, to get buy-in from the hoteliers and vacation rentals owners, to establish a board that is balanced, that includes the voice of the lodging community, but also the regular community and supporting industries. And that will help also give us time to do a recruitment for an executive director and develop a strategic plan. Again, using TBID funds, not city general funds. So with that, I know that's a lot to cover in a short period of time. We did attach the summary report from the stakeholder group and the survey results that came along with that. And I'm happy to answer any questions that council has. And again, Chuck Davison from Visit SoCal is also on the line with us tonight to answer questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Scott. And Chuck, thanks for being here. We'll, if we have any specific questions, we'll call you out, sir. With that, I'll go ahead, and open it up for council questions. Councilmember Davis, would you like to start us off, sir, our TV liaison?
Sure, thank you. Scott, you said that the nonprofit board would be made up of primarily lodging representatives. Who else would be on the board?
It could be a combination of things. I mean, it couldn't be all lodging, but I think having some balance is also important. Some boards have city staff or council member or a community member at large to sort of represent the community viewpoint. Could also include connecting industries like retail or restaurants. So there's really a lot of different flavors, and Chuck, he's a countywide board. He also has allows the cities in each of the jurisdictions in the county to appoint someone to the board so that there's a geographic representation. That's not as much in play here since it's just one city we're talking about. So I think it's really what council feels most comfortable and the lodging industry feels comfortable as a good balance of voices. But again, a key aspect here is that the group felt that we want to make sure it's accountable to those who are kind of collecting the assessment and, in a sense, are paying into the program, if you will.
Okay, and who and when will the decision be made as to the makeup of the board?
I haven't figured that out exactly. Chuck might be able to give some inclination to that since he helped, as part of the process, if you will, in the creation of Visit SoCal. Chuck, I don't know if you have a sense of the timing of that. Is it after we sort of have created the board that you fill the membership, or does council sort of direct that now?
I think what would traditionally happen is in order for the process to start, you would need to develop first your management district plan, and that would outline the scale of the board, the scale of the assessment, who was being assessed, and how the process was being set up. And Civitas, who Mr. Collins and the group has talked to, is the leader. They've set up over 100 of these in the state of California. They would help develop that process. That management district plan would then be the document that you would use to go out, and that management district plan would first need to be approved by the council, because although it is the lodging group that is asking for this assessment to be made, remember it's the council and the city that actually has to collect the assessment, just as you do with TOT or even with the current TBID. So council would approve that management district plan under the advisement of Mr. Collins, making sure all the things that your finance department and everybody wanted in there were done. You would then use that management district plan as the basis for your petition collection. So that's what each of your lodging establishments who are signing that petition in favor of the district would essentially be agreeing to as the implementation of the district would come along. So that process would likely be, you'd want to, if you were running a parallel path, I think we had mapped wanting to get out to petition collection sometime probably the first of the year. So you'd want that board makeup, or at least the design of what you wanted the board makeup to be. It doesn't mean that you have to select those people until the district is ready to start in July, but you'd want the makeup decision of that to occur likely before the end of the year or into January at the latest.
Okay, so when we go out for the petition vote, we have to have 50% affirmative to switch from the 89 to the 94 just at the outset, as well as every 5 years thereafter. Is that correct?
So that is correct. You would need 50%, and when we say 50%, it's 50% plus $1 in revenue. The makeup is revenue, not rooms or lodging establishments. Once you complete that five-year term, just as Visit SoCal did on June 30th of this year, your renewal can be for up to 10 years. You could limit it to 7. You could, but it can be anywhere between 5 and 10 years in the second renewal opportunity.
Okay. And Chuck, you have a magnificent background on your Zoom view. When you address Pismo Beach City Council, do you show them the rock?
Sure, I take Morro Bay with me everywhere I go.
Okay, thank you. That's all the questions I have. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Councilmember Davis. Appreciate that. Councilmember Heller, sir, questions?
Sure. So, Mr. Collins, so I see we've budgeted $50,000 to $75,000 to make this transition. Can you explain to me a little bit about what those costs are based on?
Yeah, it's some of it's a bit of speculation. Some of it's a little more concrete. Civitas is Mr. Davidson mentioned. Has been engaged by the city just generally to understand kind of the services they provide. Their contracts for this type of work, which is really kind of setting up the 94 Act, which is just a ton of paperwork, and then also helping to form the board, as you mentioned, creating that district plan. All told, is in the $30,000 to $40,000 neighborhood. There probably is a little bit of work to do in terms of some of the outreach to the hoteliers, which could be a smaller, much smaller contract, and then potentially, not necessarily, but potentially maybe warranted to do an executive recruitment for the all important executive director position. That is something that is recommended. It's not something we absolutely have to do, but it is recommended. There are a lot of folks out there who are looking for work in this area, that being in this industry. So it may be wise to do such a recruitment. So if you put all those pieces together, that's where we came up with the estimation of that. And again, that would be to use TBID funds. The TBID board was supportive of that. I would not recommend using general fund dollars at this time for something like that.
It just seemed like a lot of money to me to set up a nonprofit and recruit an executive, but you know more about it than I do. The other question I had was, in general, can TBID surplus funds be carried forward from year to year, or are they typically spent every year?
Yes, they can be, so long as you're required to report any carry forward, if you will. I'm sure they use a different term, but that's the one I understand. You just have to make sure you report that at the end of the year. We do have an accumulation fund. Unfortunately, it'll largely be tapped because of the impacts of COVID-19. But we had a pretty healthy reserve of about 25% prior to COVID-19 occurring. So yes, you can move those forward. The goal is to try to spend the amount that you budget, but we don't always hit that.
Okay. And then I noticed one of the action items, which we seem to talk about whenever TBID is agendized, which is to spend some TBID money on infrastructure. And every time it comes up, I ask the same question, how and what is and when is that going to happen?
Well, now is a good time to sort of have that conversation, I would say, with a five-year window especially. I haven't been given direction to do anything other than what we have been doing at this point, which is the marketing piece.
We know that PISMO did increase their TBIT assessment by 1%, so they're currently 2%. Their 1% generates about $1 million, where our 1% generates less than 300,000, so it's a significant difference. They use that 1% for specific projects, PISMO Preserve, the pier, and the undergrounding and road improvements in one of their major business districts. Again, the connection there is that those specific projects will drive overnight stays. And if it doesn't, then you're liable to lawsuits, and successful lawsuits against the bid or the city.
I missed the last thing you said there about those specific projects will do what?
If they will drive overnight stays.
Oh, drive overnight stays.
Yeah, so I guess the way to look at this is you don't use TBID funds for city operations. You really would struggle to defend that in court. They say we're going to use TBID funds for instance, restroom trash service. So we all know the impacts are being felt heavily there in Morro Bay and places like PISMO as well. That's not something that's typically done. Now, a separate business improvement district, which is a space-specific location like the waterfront or downtown, certainly bids can be set up. They are set up in downtowns all over the country for that specific purpose, which could include trash and trash pickup or restaurants or enhanced restroom services or street cleaning, for instance, or sidewalk cleaning. T-bid funds are typically not used for that purpose.
Right. Okay. Those are my questions. Thank you, Scott. Thank you, Chuck, for joining us, too. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Councilmember. Councilmember McPherson, questions, please.
Yes, thank you very much. I did submit some questions to Mr. Collins in advance, and he kindly answered them. And some of my questions have already been asked. And I did watch the TBIT meeting, so they also asked good questions. And I do appreciate Mr. Davison being here. But I just want to follow up a little bit on how the money can be used. And it's the TBIT money. And my understanding is that the current TBIT that we have right now specifically says the money has to be spent on marketing, but this would give us an opportunity in rewriting the purpose of the new TBID to change it somewhat. Is that an accurate statement?
Yes, you could certainly use that as an opportunity to look at the charter, if you will, of the TBID right now is absolutely 100% marketing focused, as most TBIDs are. I'm sure there are other examples aside from PISMO, but I don't know of any where they have deviated from that and have a specific time frame, this 5 years maximum for PISMO to use that for specific visitor-specific projects. So again, not just general city services, but again, this could be an opportunity to look at it. It was something that the tourism stakeholder group discussed, but there was really no coalition around or coalescing around that as a recommendation for council. I think they feel at this time we should invest the focus on marketing, make sure we're marketing strongly, positioning ourselves well once we're out of COVID-19, that is. But certainly recognize that there are needs in the city to make improvements when we're able to financially.
So in this next phase, once we have a consultant on board and they're going to be writing this management district plan, will the stakeholder group continue to be involved, or what is the role of the city in participating in that process? How would we participate?
A great question. The TBID would probably be just much like it already serves as council advisory. So probably some of the heavy lifting outside of the Civitas, whatever we would move forward with, the TBID would review things more regularly. But as Mr. Davison mentioned, any change, any district plan would need to be reviewed and approved by city council before we take kind of the next bigger steps. So the first is tonight deciding if these recommendations are worth pursuit and if there's support for using TBID funds to begin this process. And if so, then we would initiate that and spend the next several months sort of going through review of all the district management components and getting the team on board. And yeah, I think
three of the TBIN members were on the stakeholder group, so I think we have pretty good representation from the stakeholder group on the TBIN, and I think that's the appropriate body to kind of do this work and then bring recommendations to council.
And then moving forward, how would the city be involved once this new board is established? What would be the advisory? You said advisory role. I'm just wondering, officially, what does that mean? Would things be brought to the council for approval, or how would that work exactly?
Yeah, so under the five-year plan, if we move to the five-year plan and the nonprofit board, the city council would approve the district after the pro vote, if you will, or affirmative vote from the hotelier vacation rental industry. City council would still have to approve that to move it forward. At that point, then it's on a five-year cycle. But traditionally, even with a five-year cycle, there's check-ins in the city council, probably on an annual basis related to the budget. Whether city staff or council has a seat on the board is yet to be determined. That's always one way to check in, and I'm sure there are other mechanisms that can be established. Maybe Chuck could highlight some of those to ensure that there's still good connectivity between the city and this new apparatus.
And yeah, I think there's.
Go ahead.
I was going to say there's a few ways. One, to Mr. Collins' point, you know, you could have, like in our case, our board is 19, 18 of which are lodging members, and then the county government appoints a seat. So Jim Hamilton, who is the county tax assessor and collector, is our appointed government seat and participates in the process. Equally with that, we have an advisory committee where twice a year we come back and meet with one member of every city manager, along with one member of the elected group from every community. That's currently Council Member Davis for Morro Bay. So there's multiple ways to kind of tie that out to assure that you've got the connectivity that you want, and much easier done in a community of one than it is at the county level. The other note that I would just make real quick, both based on Council Member Heller's question and Council Member McPherson's question on the funding and the spending of those dollars, there's one qualifier that you just have to manage to, regardless of whether you're in the 89 Act or the 94 Act. And to Mr. Collins' standpoint, you can revise essentially the corporate charter of what the organization is going to do. That was done with us 5 years ago. It's the reason the destination management strategy, that 30-year look that we did on behalf of the entire county, happened. That was not marketing. That was management, and really focused more on infrastructure and development for the future. But the qualifier is this: both the 89 and the 94 Act require that the dollars that are collected show a direct and specific benefit to the property being assessed. So you have to be able to tie back those two keywords, direct and specific, to them. And in the case, to Mr. Collins' point on things like the Shell Beach Streetscape and the pier and the Pismo Preserve, the lodging community felt that that was direct and specific enough that it would also obviously help the community and the residents and all of us that live across the county, but it would impact the visitors, and it was direct and specific enough to be able to point back to creating that additional assessment. So that's just the one qualifier that you have to manage to. But again, for a community like Morro Bay that needs development and infrastructure in the tourism space, I think there's a lot that can come out of that at the will of both parties.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. That's very helpful. And my last question, you implied that the consultant would be selecting the executive director. Wouldn't that be something that the TBID, the new board, would do? Or is that not, am I misunderstanding?
No. Sorry if I, no, definitely not the intention. No, the executive recruiter would just help in the facilitating the process, much like you may do for a city manager or an executive position in the city, to have somebody who specializes in that field to go out and do a deep dive and see who's out there, do the advertising and help facilitate the process. But the new board would be the decision maker about who was hired and who was ultimately fired in the long term.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Yeah.
Thank you, Council Member. Council Member Addis, please, questions.
At the ton of, I don't have a ton of questions. I think we've talked a lot, though, about wanting to use these dollars for other things. And so my biggest would really be just how do we get that going? How do we accelerate that process outside of if we were to vote for this? Then how do we really accelerate the process to be able to use those dollars for the product of Morro Bay?
Yeah, that's a good question, and it's sort of a in middle ground of like trying to form a new entity. It's probably the opportune time to also discuss what the charter is. As Mr. Davison mentioned, that this is a grand opportunity to do that. As I did mention, the stakeholder group did not coalesce around a recommendation specific to that. I think they believe that there's still work to do to enhance and to make our marketing effort more effective. We still, even with the 3% assessment, are far behind places like Pismo in terms of the marketing power. They're 1%. So I think that's a consideration. Obviously, we have a significant amount of needs in our infrastructure. To be able to decide what is specific, as Mr. Davison mentioned, and direct benefits, that would be a harder thing to nail down, I think. In our case, especially with if you did 1%, that's only $300,000 a year. I don't know what specific projects we accomplish with that kind of funding. So I think that's going to be an important discussion to have as we go through this process.
That's really my main question on the question side. That's my main thing.
Okay, thank you. And thank you, Scott, for your presentation. Appreciate that very much. Just a couple of additional questions. With regard to the creation of the what I'll call new vehicle or management structure, what would happen to the current TBID board? Would there still be a TBID board and then a sub-entity that would be this new not-for-profit structure, or does the TBID board go away, or does it remain the TBID board, and is that what the vehicle is? Just unclear about that.
Yeah, I think there's different ways of approaching that and creating different structures to ensure that there's still accountability to the city and the community overall. So I think there's still a lot of room to kind of think those pieces through, and we believe if we work with a group like Civitas, we'd be able to explore those different opportunities. I think talking with the TBID board last month, they seemed to be great interest amongst those members to potentially be part of the new board, if you will. Right now it's hard to give you a clear answer, Mayor Edding, but I think there's a lot of different options that we need to look into first.
And would that new board, quote unquote, be subject to the Brown Act?
Yes, I'm getting a head nod.
Getting a head nod?
Yes, absolutely. Any TBID in the state of California is subject under either law to the Brown Act, just as we are.
I thought so. Just wanted to make sure that we had that clear for the public's understanding of it. Would there be, Mr. Collins, or perhaps Ms. Calloway, any general fund savings to the city in transitioning to this model, especially realizing that in the past we have allocated dollars to certain functions from the general fund? Those would obviously go away, and we've actually in the last year stopped doing that. But are there additional gains that the city may have, either through administrative or pension costs, that would reduce our liability, financial liability?
I don't know about that. I know there was a general fund contribution to the TBID in the past, which we ceased doing leading up to COVID-19. On the pension side, I'll leave that to Calloway, Mrs. Calloway, to answer. But I think mainly it'll just sort of be an offset. The TBID may want to contract with the city to provide overhead functions, administrative functions potentially, or they could use the chamber or another organization for that. So there could be a slight revenue opportunity for the city, but I would
not really categorized as significant. So Jen, I don't know if you have an answer for the other part is just from the standpoint of it's another line of business that the city currently operates, and we're very lean at this time. And so it would provide, it's an opportunity cost, and that, you know, something we have to manage day to day. And if it's relinquished to another group, that's one less thing the city has to oversee.
Yeah, I would just augment that by saying, you know, certainly wouldn't be accruing pension liabilities for an in-house employee as we were under the previous model. And also, I don't remember the percentage off the top of my head, but I believe our recent cost allocation plan had indicated we were essentially had about a 17% overhead that was being absorbed through managing the TBID. And that would obviously go away, as we wouldn't be incurring those costs. We never charged that to the TBID fund. The city absorbed that as part of the administration costs. So that time could be reallocated, as Scott mentioned.
So in essence, I'll use my term significant. There could be significant savings to the general fund with this transition as proposed. Somewhat significant. How's that?
I think that's a fair statement, especially in light of the PERS costs.
Okay, good. Thank you for that. Under the five-year plan, the 94 law, TBID law, where would approval specifically or budget authority lie? Would it lie with the city council every 5 years? Would it lie with the new entity or vehicle that was created, or elsewhere?
Probably have to refer to Mr. Davidson on that, since he has direct experience with the five-year. But the establishment of the assessment, ultimately the authority is with city council. But on the year-to-year, I'm not entirely sure if the county oversees that budget or approves the budget. Chuck, can you help me on that? Thanks.
Yeah, happy to. So that would be called out in the district plan. One of the things that the law requires in the development of the district plan is a segmentation of the budget. So it would essentially, you know, pie chart out what's going to be spent on marketing, what's going to be spent on administration, what's going to be spent on, you know, overall operations, etc. That has to be done for two reasons. One, it has to be agreed to by the municipality, but it also has to be agreed to by the lodging community, who is supporting the assessment. If a district was to say, I'm going to spend 50% of our funds on overhead, you know, it's probably highly unlikely that the lodging community would agree to that, because they want the majority of the dollars to go to marketing. So that's established at the beginning of the 5 years. It is not cross-checked with the municipality during that five-year process, other than, to Mr. Collins' earlier point, the organization is required every year by law to come back and report out on how those funds were spent. And when the management district plan is established with the budget, it only allows for about a 5% variance on any of those buckets. So they don't have the ability to go back and change it. And that is structured that way for that five-year period. At the end of the five-year period, obviously the municipality would be able to weigh in again, make sure that the accountability had existed for what was previously outlined and spent, and then make any updates or changes that they would like to see going forward. An example of that is when we first started the district in 2015, we had a lot of overhead costs to get the business set up, research and things that needed to be done. As the business got farther along, more and more of our dollars went directly to advertising spending, because we didn't need some of those initial setup costs that we originally had. So you would be, you know, going through that same type of structure over the years ahead.
Thanks, Chuck, for that explanation. I appreciate that. With regard to the authority for establishing the TOT assessment amount, the ultimate authority would reside every 5 years with the city. Is that correct? And increases would be determined on an every 5 year basis, or decreases based upon recommendations and then decision making by the city?
Yeah, it's a two-step process. You need first the to get a, the 50% plus one from the industry, and then city council approval. And in the case of SloCal, they did the first initial 5-year and then moved forward into a 10-year. Once you get through the initial 5-year, you can extend beyond a 5-year window. And in this case, they had to work with the cities and the county for that extension, as well as the movement from a 1% assessment to a 1.5% assessment.
Great. Thank you for that. And my last question is, on page number 49 of the staff report, which is the bottom, number 3, the third recommendation that is being made by the stakeholder group to diversify the visitor profile by creating a new identity for Morro Bay, moving it away from a primarily budget destination to one that attracts a wider spectrum of visitors in terms of income. That, to me, is a major strategy change from our existing strategic plan that was approved by council just over a year ago. I'm just wondering if you could just elaborate on that and what the primary focus was based upon.
Yeah, I mean, I think having 8 individuals who've been involved in Morro Bay or SLO County marketing or tourism or just operating businesses in that space have seen the need to shift the focus based on their own experiences. And I know we started to create new opportunities in our marketing to hit non-traditional markets. But we were just sort of getting into that before we ran into COVID-19. So I think the pause allowed us to really evaluate that closely. I mean, I got to be honest, I'm not an expert in marketing. It's not what I specialized in my college years or a master's degree or anything like that. So I look to the experts who work in that area, and they think there is an opportunity to go beyond what we are. That includes doing things like making improvements on the public side, as well as assisting or making the process to do upgrades to hotels as easy as possible, or at least as efficient as possible from the city processing standpoint, but also those companies being willing to invest in their properties. They have to understand that there's a long-term benefit for them. A lot of times we're just trying to deal with what's right in front of us and miss those long-term opportunities, both as a city, as well as an individual business owner, as well as how we market. So taking the long view, especially with a 5-year window, gives us the opportunity to do that, as opposed to rushing each year to get back into like, okay, we need to go back and get reassessed. Let's stop everything we're doing. This gives us the opportunity to do that. And I think the question that's been raised by most every council member tonight is a good one, is that, okay, how do we invest in on the public side? Because we don't have the opportunity to do that right now. And so the TBID funds definitely looks like an appealing place to look into for that. And certainly is going to be part of the discussion, it seems like, moving forward. But again, I think the opportunity is there, as well as maybe looking at how we market coming out of COVID-19 as a starting point.
Great, Scott. Thank you so much. Appreciate that. With that, I will go ahead and open up a public comment for item C-1. Any member of the public wishing to comment on C-1, please raise your hand. And Zeke, do we have any public comment?
Sir, at this time, we have nobody in the queue with their hands raised.
I'll just give it a second here. Okay, seeing no hands or hearing.
Excuse me, sir. Oh. Just one.
Here we go.
Yeah.
One hand, okay.
Yeah. Maggie, you are on the line.
Hi, this is Maggie Jurin.
And I just, welcome, Maggie.
Hi, John. Mayor Heading. I just wanted to real quickly. Mayor Heading, you asked the question of Scott about the TOT amount, and I think what Mr. Collins responded with was about the assessment. I think the TOT gets set by the city. The assessment amount, just as we saw with the county, can be raised or lowered at that five-year mark or whatever the renewal point is. So I just want to be clear that the TOT is set by the city is my understanding, and the other isn't. I was on this committee, and I fully support it. And you know, I thought some very good points were made as far as the, as you said again, Mayor Heading, about the original view from the study accepted by the TBID a year ago to go to market ourselves as a budget or you know, good value destination. I didn't support that at the time. I don't support that now. I really think we have the opportunity, particularly because of this unique situation where our city has welcomed a lot of new visitors who have never been here before because they have been able to travel to other places. But now since they've been forced to be local, they're coming here. I think we have a great opportunity to try to tap more into that market of the higher spender, the better, you know, the higher spending client. So I support that initiative wholeheartedly, and I hope our city and that you guys support this effort too. Thank you.
Thank you, Maggie. Appreciate your comment. Zeke, anybody else in the queue, sir?
Mr. Mayor, at this time, we have nobody else with their hand raised.
Okay, with that, I will close public comment on item C-1, bring it back to council for discussion, and I'll ask our esteemed TBID liaison, Council Member Davis, would you start us off, sir?
Yes, I'll start off by saying that the original TBID that was established here in Morro Bay was initiated by members of the lodging industry. They set up the business improvement district and brought it to council for approval as required by law. And then they ran it as a nonprofit board for a number of years, and I thought very successfully. So I see nothing wrong with returning to that model. So I would like to go ahead and move that council support tourism stakeholders to initiate the process to move from the 89 TBID law to the 94 TBID law, and that we convene a transition team of community stakeholders to design a new tourism management model with the city of Morro Bay in a supporting role rather than the leading role, and that we work to diversify the visitor profile by creating a new identity for Morro Bay, moving it away from a primarily budget destination to one that attracts a wider spectrum of visitors in terms of income.
Second.
Wow. Okay. We have a motion by Council Member Davis for the TBID recommendation to City Council. Second by, I think, Council Member McPherson, but just under the wire. With that, I'm going to go ahead and open it up for other council members' discussion and or comments, starting with our second, Council Member McPherson.
Yes, I just wanted to agree with Councilmember Davis, and I do have to say that I was not on the council when it was brought into the city, but had I been, I would not have supported that. I did not think that was a very good model, and so I'm actually very satisfied with moving it back to where I think it belongs, and I really do appreciate all of the work that's been done to get to that point, and so I totally support the recommendations, but we do need to be involved in this transition process. I'm hopeful that the council has an opportunity to weigh in on some of these issues that we've raised tonight. So those are my comments.
Thank you for that. Council Member Heller, any comments on the motion?
Yes, I support the motion for sure, and the new structure. Like Council Member McPherson, I am concerned about kind of the focus and some of the comments that came out of this committee. I think we have a tendency to dream big and we're convinced we can somehow make Morro Bay a different place where big rollers are going to come and spend a lot of money. My take is we have a lot of work to do in the infrastructure department, and we'd be better served to market ourselves for what we are and just try and do it much better. But obviously, as Councilmember McPherson mentioned, hopefully we'll be involved with those kinds of discussions in the future. But I definitely support the motion. Thank you.
Thank you for those comments. Councilmember Addis, please.
I support the motion, and I just wanted to say thank you to Chuck for being here and for all the work that the committee did.
I can't hear you, Don.
You can't hear me?
Much better, Don.
You hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. I just wanted to say thank you to Chuck and to the committee and to all the work that was done. I am excited to move forward with the possibility that we could get to the place where we could improve the product of Morro Bay. For me, that's the end goal. And if this is the step, the next step towards making that happen, that I'm fully excited about it, and I definitely support the motion.
Thank you all for those comments. I also support the motion. I want to thank the TBID board, the stakeholder group, for the time that they've taken to provide input. I also, like Councilmember Heller, and I'm sure everybody else, but Councilmember Heller made the comment that it's interesting if you look at some of the discussion items that were obtained by the facilitator when the stakeholder group gave input and then the TBID board gave input. Very telling. I do believe the new structure will allow this vehicle to decrease general fund liability to the city, which is extremely important during these difficult times with the pandemic as we find ourselves financially challenged. I also believe that moving to the five-year plan will increase the ability of the actual stakeholders to make be in a decision-making capacity that will allow them to move even more nimbly than we are moving now. And that's no disrespect to the city, but we know that when we have government overlay significantly, that sometimes can impede progress. I also believe that the new strategic vision is extremely important in advancing the collections for the city with regard to TOT. And I look forward to what the group will come up with regard to strategic vision and strategic plan in the future in achieving that. So I also very much support this, and we'll call the question.
Councilmember Davis.
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson.
Yes.
Councilmember Addis.
Yes.
Heller.
Yes.
Mayor Heading.
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Again, thank you, Chuck, for being here. Appreciate your presence and all that you do for our county with regard to tourism. And thank you again, Mr. Collins, for the presentation. With that, that will move us to item C-2. This is amendment number 2 to the Memorandum of Understanding between Morro Bay Open Space Alliance, or MOBOSA, and the city to protect Eagle Rock / Cerrito Peak in perpetuity as undeveloped public open space through conservation easement. Amendment number 1 to the MOU for payment from MOBOSA to the city, $265,000 by October 31st. 2020, and with that, I will turn this over to our esteemed attorney, Mr. Niermeyer.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor, members of the City Council. This item, as the Mayor mentioned, has a fiscal impact of $265,000 to the City's general fund. The background of this item before the Council tonight is that the history of Eagle Rock, or it's also known as Cerrito Peak, is its undeveloped open space at a unique peak in the city. And this public open space back in 2011 was proposed for development. There were some city permits approved, and then after a lawsuit was filed, the owner of that space, that property, Jane Riddell, offered to sell the property to the city at a very discounted price with the understanding that it would remain undeveloped open space. The actual price of the property, the money that was deposited into escrow by the city, was $350,000, which one of the public commenters mentioned. But pursuant to the purchase sale agreement between the city, $85,000 was returned back to the city to pay for the legal fees to defend against the lawsuit that was brought against the city. So Ms. Jane Rundell only secured $265,000 for the property. In regards to the city recouping the $265,000, the city didn't think it would be proper to have the community raise money to pay for the city's legal fees, the money that came back to the city. So I hope that addresses the question on what the actual price of the property was. So after the property was purchased for a net amount of $265,000, there was an idea that the city would have a nonprofit land conservation group help recoup that money, and the intention years ago was that a nonprofit group would purchase the property. Mimbosa raised the money, the $265,000, and an MOU was entered into with the city in May of 2017. In May of 2017, there was the intent in a staff report as published to maintain the current undeveloped state and desire to sell it to a nonprofit. After Mimbosa raised the money, the $265,000, there was an MOU in April of 2020 entered into with the city, where the city made a commitment to move forward with the process to go through planning commission and council to make sure that this property was protected. Of course, the city council, until we go through the planning process, can't actually say for sure that the land would be protected in perpetuity. There's a process that the law requires for the city to go through, even though the city made a commitment to engage in that process. So there was more discussion after this MOU was entered into in April of 2020 on, is there anything else we could do to just maintain now the property in perpetuity as undeveloped public open space? From discussions between April and now, Mimbosa and the city came to the agreement that the vehicle of a conservation easement would be the best way to protect the property. Now, a conservation easement under California law, it's in the civil code, is the ability for a nonprofit group to take an easement over land which states that it's going to be maintained in its current undeveloped state. And what this MOU Amendment Number 2 does is it provides the option to Mimbosa, at its desire, to take a conservation easement or to allow that conservation easement to be taken with Mimbosa or on its own by a third-party nonprofit group. And the city, of course, has the ability to vet that group. It can't unreasonably withhold its consent. And once that conservation easement is taken, and this MOU provides that option to Mimbosa, that gets recorded. And it becomes an interest on the property where it needs to be maintained in its current undeveloped state and be maintained open to the public. Another aspect of this Amendment Number 2 is that Mimbosa, if it either dissolves as an organization or desires to at its option in the future, can assign the conservation easement back to the city. If the city takes the conservation easement under these conditions, then it would not merge with the city's fee title to the property. Basically, the city would not be able to unwind the conservation easement because it came from a third party. The city did not have the option of creating its own conservation easement back in April of 2020. Due to the mechanics of law, if the third party has it, assigns it to the city, and the interests don't merge, then it remains protected under California law. One other item that was added to the MOU Number 2 is that because this land would now be protected in perpetuity once the options exercised by Mimbosa, made it clear that the city has the authority to, as necessary, to secure the property, to fence it while maintaining public access. The idea is that we didn't want down the road, years from now perhaps, there to be some issue with the property being vandalized or partially destroyed. So the city can secure it, but the goal is to keep it open to the public, of course. Otherwise, MOU Amendment Number 2 preserves all of the other sections of the original MOU, Mimbosa is able to put a plaque or a commemorative marker on the property to acknowledge all of the volunteers that helped raise this money and Mimbosa's efforts. The city still maintains its obligations to maintain the property in its undeveloped state, which it already has anyways because it has fee title to the property. And also, this is MOU number two. MOU number one was exercised to simply extend the deadline for the $265,000 to be transferred to the city until the end of October to allow time for this MOU number two to be agreed to by the parties. MOU number two has already, amendment number two has already been signed by Mimbosa. There was unanimous board approval for approval of this. It's been executed. We have an executed copy on the agenda. And I'm open for any questions from council on this amendment number two that's presented for your consideration.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate the update and presentation. With that, I will open it up for council questions. Start with Council Member Addis first this time. Any questions?
I don't have any questions. I appreciate the work, and I feel like this is the logical next step for conserving this piece of land. So I'm very excited about this.
Thank you for that. Councilmember McPherson, any questions?
Just one, Chris. You mentioned a fence. You're not contemplating that we're necessarily going to do that. You're just suggesting that it could be in the future if there was a need for it. Is that correct?
It is. Exactly. There's no intent to put up a fence. The language itself simply provides that the city may secure the property or otherwise fence it to prevent third parties from damaging the property with the intent of maintaining public access. I just wanted to make it clear, once this conservation easement goes into effect, it must remain undeveloped land. And so if there needs to be some sort of minimal security or fencing done reasonably, then, you know, the city could do that. But that would be to protect the public's access.
Okay. All right. Thank you. That's it.
Thank you. Council Member Davis, any questions, sir?
I have no questions. I'm just happy to close this deal.
Okay. Council Member Heller, questions?
Yes. So if you can clarify this for me, Chris, the original agreement was Mimbosa going to take care of the property for perpetuity or not?
No. The original agreement was that the city committed itself to starting the process for creating an environmentally sensitive habitat for the area and to also pursue some zoning changes to provide it as to be public undeveloped open space. But the wrinkle was that those ideas that were put forward and the city agreed to, even though the city's working on them right now, there's no certainty that the city will be able to do that because they're discretionary. It has to go through planning commission and then come back to the city council. The original agreement maintained the city's ownership of the land, and the city still continues to own the land. There would now simply be an easement over it, and it would be a conservation easement.
Okay, and they'll be putting their plaque there at the front of the property?
Yes, they have the authority to put a plaque on the property.
Okay, and Mr. Collins, if you're there, do you know what we've spent on legal fees going back and forth with Mimbosa on this?
In the long term, I don't. I know Chris has been engaged a bit with them the last year or so. Chris would probably have a better idea of what the amount of hours spent on that, but the previous work, I think, has been documented. And I think that was discussed earlier. Am I correct on that, Chris?
No. There have been a few dozen hours that have been put into this. I don't have the exact tabulation in front of me for the total legal fees. We did keep it all in-house, though. We have a real estate attorney at my law firm that we used, and, of course, the discounted rate we provide to the city was used for those specialized services rather than having to go to an outside firm.
So after we deduct attorney's fees and so forth, what is the net going to be to the city for this sale, roughly?
Well, the sale already took place.
The net.
Yeah, so it'd probably be in accounting for most recent work with Imbosa and getting this agreement in place, probably close to $250,000, I assume.
Okay. Those are my questions. Thanks.
Thank you, council member. And I have no new questions. With that, I'll go ahead and open up a public comment for item C-2. Any members of the public wishing to comment on item C-2, please raise your hand now. Zeke, any public comment?
Yes, sir. Glenn, you are on the line. You need to unmute yourself, Glenn.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council. I appreciate this chance to speak to you again.
Welcome.
Read something on behalf of the Morro Bay Open Space Alliance Board of Directors. I want to thank you for the City Council and staff for working with us over many months to reach the MOU proposed tonight. Ultimately, this was made possible by the over 170 individuals, families, businesses, and foundations whose commitment to open space preservation and whose generous donations made it possible to conserve Eagle Rock. Preservation efforts had been ongoing for many years before the current efforts started in June 2017, and we are grateful to all of those supporters as well. If the council agrees with the MOU in front of us tonight, Mimbosa will soon transfer $265,000 to the city in return for a commitment to maintain Eagle Rock as open space and for the option to establish a conservation easement on the parcel at a future date. The city will continue to own the property, but all of us will enjoy this beautiful little parcel of open space in the middle of the city. And I urge you to approve it so we can conclude this transaction for a small piece of comfort that we will gain, not the ownership of any land and not the control of that land, which will remain with the city. Thank you.
Thank you, Glenn. Zeke, other public comment?
No, sir. At this time, nobody has their hand raised in the queue.
Okay. With that, I will close public comment and bring it back to council. And either entertain a motion or if we have further discussion.
I would like to make a motion.
Okay.
I would like to move that the council approve amendment number 2 to Memorandum of Understanding between Morro Bay Open Space Alliance and the city to protect Eagle Rock, also known as Cerrito Peak, in perpetuity as undeveloped public open space through conservation easement, and ratify amendment number 1 to the MOU and accept the $265,000 that they have so generously raised.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Motion by Councilmember McPherson to approve the recommendation, staff recommendation. Second by Councilmember Davis. Any further comments?
Yes. I did a quick calculation of the attorney fees. If Chris, as he said, several dozen, 36 hours would amount to $6,480. So the city will net almost $260,000 from this transaction.
Thank you, Councilmember Davis.
I just want to add a sincere thank you to the Morro Bay Open Space Alliance for taking on the job of raising the money and paying the city for that. And also, I want to thank Mayor Hedding for originally working with Ms. Vidal to actually make this purchase, which is a great addition to the city of open space. And I so thank you.
Thank you. I too support the motion, obviously, originally did, and very much respect the work that was done by Mimbosa and reaching out to our community to to preserve this sacred place, Eagle Rock, into perpetuity for us all to enjoy. We are so grateful to you and the work that you've done. The city's general fund will appreciate greatly if this motion passes, receiving the $265,000 that you have worked so hard to raise. And we look forward to an ongoing collaborative relationship.
And I'll just concur with my colleagues. So excited that this has come to fruition. I remember some of the very beginning conversations about this, and it's a momentous task to raise that amount of money as a new group, as a first time in doing this kind of a project. And I'm extremely happy to see that it has come to fruition and that it's going to close out with the conservation of Eagle Rock itself.
Thank you. Any other comments? If not, I'll ask for a roll call vote, please.
Councilmember McPherson.
Yes.
Yes.
Councilmember Addis.
Yes.
Member Heller.
No.
And Mayor Hedding.
Yes.
Motion carries 4-1.
Thank you. That concludes item C2. We will move to item C-3, authorization for submittal of a letter of support to the Ocean Protection Council, solicitation of grant proposals for upgrades to Morro Rock parking lot to reduce polluted stormwater runoff to ocean and certain city commitments for project. And I will turn it over to, is it Mr. Leivick?
No, Mayor,
Ms. Galloway, thank you.
Thank you. I'm just going to do a quick intro and then ask Damaris Hansen, our environmental services coordinator or manager, to give a little bit more information on the project. But this was originally a grant program brought forward to the city. City staff has been in conversation with Surf Rider and the organizations working collaboratively on this grant, and we really viewed this as a creative way and a beneficial way for our environment to potentially do some enhancements to the rock parking lot that are needed and could benefit the city with grant funding. And as our financial situation carries on with the pandemic, staff is really looking for opportunities like this that'll have minimal cost, but some improvements for the city. So we wanted to share that with the council and hear the council's thought on this. And with that, Damaris, maybe you can give a little bit more information before our guest presenter, Leeson, with his presentation.
Sure. Thanks, Jen. So good evening, Mr. Mayor and City Council. It's nice to see everyone this evening. tonight, we're just going to present the council a potential grant opportunity for the Rock parking lot area. Daniel Apt, the president of Alanu, along with his project team and the city, approached the city staff in interest of pursuing a grant for a bioretention project at the Rock parking lot as part of the California Ocean Protection Council Prop 68. City staff has worked with Daniel and the project team previously on other projects. Most recently, city staff worked with Darla Inglis, who's part of this team. Darla is the one who helped acquire the grant for the stormwater pocket park that treats the boat wash rinse out near the Thailand Park. So tonight, I have the pleasure to introducing Daniel, and he's working with, in collaboration with the Surf Rider Foundation, in pursuing green infrastructure solutions for stormwater capture. These projects are to implement bioretention systems in parking lots at popular surf spots along the Central Coast, or the California Coast. So without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to Daniel, and we will be here for questions after.
Thank you, Damaris, and welcome, Daniel.
Thank you so much, Mayor, and thank you, Damaris, for the introduction. Thank you, Mayor Hedding and City Council for having me come present today. I have a presentation, and I will think I can go ahead and share my screen. Let's see here. Can everyone see my screen okay?
Looks good.
Excellent. All right. Well, I'm going to present to you today about a project that's a bit more comprehensive than just the city of Morro Bay, but I'll focus on the elements in the city of Morro Bay. And as the mayor said, we have worked with the city in the past, also on a grant project, providing LID technical assistance. The whole project team actually worked closely with the city in the past. So this project's now been kind of named by the Surfrider Foundation and my company, Alanu, the Green Infrastructure Solutions for Stormwater Capture and Coastal Resilience at the California Beaches Project. So the concept of the project is, and the primary purpose is to reduce polluted stormwater runoff to protect the ocean waves and beaches in California, as well as educate surfers and the public about green stormwater infrastructure. The idea is that we are planning to implement bioretention systems at parking lots of popular surf spots along the California coast. I came up with this concept and approached the Surfrider Foundation, who I've worked with in the past, and they were interested in identifying locations where this could be implemented. The idea is that we've selected four surf spot parking lots along the California coast. We're going to be collaborating with parking lot owners and local Surfrider chapters as project partners as part of the project. We'll design bioretention systems in collaboration with parking lot owners as well as the local Surfrider chapters, develop educational signage for each site. We'll have a commissioning and public outreach event upon completion, and then Surfrider and Alanu will perform operation maintenance on these systems for 3 years after completion. So the project benefits include, and why Surfrider is championing this project, it does help to achieve the Surfrider mission, which is dedicated to the protection and enjoyment of the world's oceans, waves, and beaches through a powerful activist network. We will be reducing polluted runoff at surf spots, and also providing education for the surfing community and the public about both green stormwater infrastructure and ocean-friendly gardens, which is a Surfrider program to implement green infrastructure on the residential scale, as well as educate people about water quality and do this at high-traffic popular surf locations. This also provides the benefit of the opportunity for the Surfrider Foundation and the city to collaborate. And we see it as a great opportunity to get exposure for municipalities and Surfrider Foundation with implementation of green stormwater infrastructure and environmental education. Finally, we do bring an experienced team in green stormwater infrastructure and loan pack development, as well as successful award and management of state grants. I mentioned the CASCA grant that we worked on and provided technical assistance to the city a couple years ago. Just a brief introduction of the project team. So I'm Daniel App, president of Alanu. I bring to the team other colleagues in my group, Claudia Grandez, who's an outreach specialist, and Brad Parks, who's a project engineer. Also, we bring to the table AHVL. They're a firm out of Washington State with a good deal of green infrastructure experience and also previously worked on the CASCA grant. And then many of you maybe know Darla Inglis, or going as her maiden name, Darla Ellswick, and she used to lead the Central Coast Low Impact Development Initiative. And the whole team, project team, has worked together for the better part of a decade, and we have extensive experience in green stormwater infrastructure and low impact development. So these are the project locations, and I identify potential here because we are seeking grant funding. So obviously, the Morro Rock Beach parking lot is the one we're going to be focusing on tonight. But also, we've approached and gotten support for projects at the locations of the Rincon Point parking lot in Ventura County, the Malibu Surfrider Beach parking lot with the County of Los Angeles in Los Angeles County, and a Huntington Beach parking lot known as Dog Beach Little Surfer and Big Surfer parking lots in the city of Huntington Beach. So all of you are very familiar with the Morro Rock Beach parking lot. I've been there several times, way before even conceiving this project. I've surfed in the pit there myself, and understand how important this resource is to the city of Morro Bay, as well as the community, and as well as Morro Rock with the Native American community. So just some pictures of essentially the existing parking lot and how the parking lot is currently configured. And this is the proposed concept design. We've met with the city a couple different times to talk about the project, and we, based on city staff input, we've come up with this concept design, which essentially integrates bioretention systems in the long green strips, and it helps to essentially separate the parking and provide a little bit better traffic flow within the parking lot. Now, based on some recent conversations with the city, the configuration and orientation of parking may have changed over the last few months during COVID-19, and so this design is not final by any means. It's just a concept at this point, and we'll work closely with the city, the local Surfrider chapter, the community, and the Native American community to come up with a concept and design that makes sense. The one thing I will note, in addition to integrating the bioretention systems, the plan is also to regrade the parking lot and lay down decomposed granite as a stabilizing element. This has the benefit of not having to pave the parking lot, which would include impervious surfaces, and it may not be able to get a coastal development permit. But does provide some stabilization with more of a softer touch with keeping our runoff coefficient low. This concept has also been presented to the deputy director of the California Coastal Commission, and he thinks it's a good concept and supports the overall project. So for those of you that are unfamiliar with bioretention systems are shallow, depressed areas that accept stormwater runoff. They are vegetated systems, but they are engineered systems and involve integration of an aggregate layer, a bioretention soil media that provides really the work in removing pollutants, a mulch layer, and then specifically plants designed to be able to accept stormwater runoff and essentially keep their feet wet during storm events. The plants that we would integrate into this system would be native coastal bluff-type plants, and part of that benefit and thought process is to provide a coastal resiliency element to the project, which closely aligns with the grant program guidelines of Prop 68 and the Ocean Protection Council coastal resiliency solicitation. This gives you just a concept, a very high-level rendering that we've put together of where we would place one of the bioretention systems along the parking lot, being very mindful of public access as well as parking within the parking lot. A big component of the project is educational signage. So the idea here is not only to integrate the systems, but help to educate the public, the surfers, the quite a bit of traffic that we see at this location using the ocean. And the idea is to educate them about bioretention systems, the Surfrider program, Ocean Friendly Gardens, hoping that they may implement that program and these similar type of systems at their own properties, water quality in general, and then also for some information about Morro Rock itself. The plan is to integrate these signs and integrate it in English, Spanish, Chumash, and other Native American dialects based on a coordination with the Native American community. So it would provide that educational piece to the public about green stormwater infrastructure and water quality, and the proximity to the resource that they're using and recreating in is really one of the key components so that they can understand why it's so important to integrate green stormwater infrastructure. And then Obviously, we would have the city surf rider, the local surf rider chapter, and the Native American community, as well as potentially the community at large, part of developing the sign design. And then a project like this wouldn't be really ripe without trying to make some hay out of it and get some have a local event, ribbon cutting event, to provide an opportunity to educate the public and provide more focus on the project and the built infrastructure that's there. So we'll collaborate with the city and local surf rider and regional and national staff to organize the event. And we will really use it as an educational opportunity to educate the public about green stormwater infrastructure, ocean-friendly gardens, and tour the bioretention systems and elements. And then we could also use the event to educate about Morro Rock and collaborate with the Native American community. So to date, we've done quite a bit of collaboration and outreach on the project. So we've worked with the local Surfrider chapter to do a site walk and start to talk about concepts designs almost a year ago, back on October 4th, 2019. We've done initial and follow-up presentations to city staff to talk about the project and come up with concepts. And then we've also had some coordination with Fred Collins of the Northern Chumash Tribal Council. We did receive an email providing support for the project back on August 31st. And then finally, just a little bit about the grant solicitation. So the Ocean Protection Council has put out a Prop 68 grant for coastal resiliency. Part of the grant itself does encourage the integration of nature-based solutions, green stormwater infrastructure, and then as part of their five-year plan, education, nature-based solutions, coastal resiliency, and improving water quality are all elements that we are targeting with the grant. We are developing a letter of intent that's due September 14th, so less than a week from today, and we'll have a project description, preliminary budget, schedule, and then identifying who's involved. So what we are here to request from you today is a letter from the city of Morro Bay in support of the project. And with that, thank you again for your time today, and I'm open to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Daniel, for the presentation. And I'm going to go ahead and open it up to council questions. Council Member Davis, sir, any questions?
Yes, thank you. I really like this kind of project, a natural way to cleanse polluted stormwater. But I am a little concerned about the proposal, certain city commitments for the project, which look as if it is collaboration, providing review and input on planning and design, signage, operation, maintenance plan, inspections, training, and so on. Do we have any idea the amount of staff time that will require and what effect that might have on our budget?
So, Damaris, do you want me to answer that, or do you want to provide input?
Sure.
So we've started to do some preliminary estimates on staff commitment time. Again, this will be long-term from the city, so we're not requiring anything but input on the design to make sure that there is essentially approval from the city. We don't want to be implementing anything that the city doesn't want to see and ultimately maintain. There are training opportunities and plenty of opportunities along the way for the city to meet more or less involved, but we're essentially taking on the entire project ourselves. But we don't want to proceed without city input. So with that, maybe I'll turn over to Damaris if she has any other input on kind of, level of commitment.
That's similar to what I was going to say. And I would just also like to add that most grants are going to require some sort of financial, back from the city, and this one doesn't. And so it's kind of a huge point of this grant as well.
And the mayor, thank you for bringing that up. There is no match requirement for this particular grant. We are providing kind of volunteer time match from Surfrider Foundation, but we are bringing specific funds to the table.
Okay, that was my only question. Thank you.
Sure, thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Davis. Councilmember McPherson, any questions?
Thank you. I actually did submit questions ahead of time, and they were answered in the presentation. So I don't have any additional ones. I was a little bit concerned about how many parking spaces might be taken up in the parking lot, but it sounds like that's not the case. And you would obviously beautify the parking lot considerably. The only other question I might ask, though, concerns the you are submitting a grant for all four of these areas. And do you have any sense of the overall grant? You said you're developing a budget, but what's the overall cost of a project like this?
So,
specifically related to Morro Bay's portion of it, I guess.
Yeah, so we're currently developing the cost estimates for the project. The Morro Bay site is by far the biggest out of all the sites. The other sites are kind of smaller drainage area, and the Morro Rock Beach parking lot is larger. So initial estimates of the cost is approximately $700,000. To do the work. And the overall grant, the maximum that we can request is $2 million. So we're probably going to be, with the other sites, we have a smaller site with Malibu Beach that the cost, the capital cost is less than $100,000. And the other two sites are in the range of about $200,000 to $300,000. And so you can see those things start adding up. So we're looking at options as far as to reduce costs associated with the Morro Rock Beach parking lot layout. And it may just be different configurations or less configuration of what we've put together so far. But we do plan to get this well under the $2 million mark because we want to develop a proposal that's competitive.
Right. Thank you. What do you think your chances are?
Well, I hope our chances are really good. I would say that we're ticking a lot of the boxes within both the grant solicitation, the grant program guidelines, and the 5-year ocean protection plan, strategic plan. And so I think... and because this is somewhat of a unique project where we're bringing different entities together that don't normally work together, the Surfrider Foundation, both the national and local chapter, or local chapters, as well as cities and potentially even state parks, as well as, trying to work with the Native American community, I think it ticks a lot of boxes for the Ocean Protection Council. Not to mention, I did pass this by of a colleague that's a deputy director at the California Coastal Commission, and he really liked the project, and we're hoping he's looking to provide us a letter of support as well.
All right. Well, thank you so much for all of the work you've put in and for answering my questions.
No problem. Thank you. Councilmember Heller, any questions, sir?
Yeah, Daniel, thank you for that presentation. Enjoyed it very much. When I look at that, the first thought that comes to mind, and this is kind of, designing ahead of anything, is that most pedestrian traffic is perpendicular to your retention basins there. So I'm assuming you would have crossing points along the line there so that people could cross and carry their surfboards down to the beach.
Of course, yeah. So that was a general concept. So there's a couple different ways we can do that. We can either create small bridges over the systems themselves or create isolated cells and leave pathways in between the cells. So the latter is probably more likely because it will keep costs down and keep maintenance down as well. So we don't want to interrupt traffic going to the beach. We're trying to be consistent with the California.
We lost you there for a minute, Daniel.
Are you there, Daniel?
It's like Daniel froze there.
He froze.
Daniel froze. Yeah, it just got frozen. There.
Maybe while he tries to come back online there and unfreezes, you'll notice in the diagram that was provided, it was, as Damaris mentioned, the previous layout for the rock. The important thing to keep in mind is this is, you know, really early concepts. We'd be working with the team if they were awarded this grant on the new layout and providing all of those safety accommodations for pedestrians.
That's my only question.
Thank you, Councilmember Heller. Councilmember Addis, please.
My main question is, are there maintenance costs to the city? Did he mention sort of a three-year timeline, and then there's maintenance cost on the city after that, or?
Correct. They will maintain it for the first 3 years, and then the city will take over the operation and maintenance of that. So that would consist of kind of cleaning any debris out of there, replacing plants and soil as it's needed or mulch as needed.
And are there estimated costs, not on the maintenance, but on the plant replacement and that kind of thing?
I don't believe there are yet, because it's just such a concept plan. By now, they don't, you know, we don't have no detail of what type of plants and all that kind of stuff we're going to have quite yet.
And is there a scenario in which part of the grant is awarded but not all? I know there's four parking lots you're looking at or four areas. Is there a scenario in which you get, you know, one project over the other or reduced amount of money and have to make some choices?
I believe it's a whole project together. So it's not that portions of it would be chosen. It's one large project.
It's an all or nothing.
Yes, exactly. That's the way I understand. Okay. I can later, though, if I need to.
And remind me the time frame of between, say the city writes the letter tonight and then from now until we actually see implementation if the grant was to be awarded.
Before we'd actually, start building, it was spring of 2021, I believe. If we got awarded and made it past each of those steps, the actual awarding time would be spring of 2021.
And then how long to build out?
How long do you have to build? I don't know that number. I'm not sure how long you have until you have to finish your completion of the project. I don't know if that's been stated yet.
And is it the type of project where parking would be disrupted, I assume, during the build?
We would try not to as much as possible. Obviously we want to always have them have flow in the parking lot and everything and try not to disrupt the parking and try not to take away any parking or anything like that. But I imagine there would be a little bit of disruption during the construction of it.
Got it. Thank you. That's all my questions.
Thank you, Councilmember Addis. You asked several of my questions. Appreciate that.
My apologies, Mayor and City Council. I had a computer crash right in the middle of when I was answering your question. So I'm back now. My apologies if you're still on this item.
Well, we moved on to the next item. No, I'm just kidding. We're Daniel, that's happened several times to us before, so we certainly understand. The only addition, we went through every council member's questions, and I'm going last. From a staff standpoint, can you tell me if we authorize the submittal of a letter of support, what that binds us to in the future?
So, Damaris, did you want to answer that, or do you want me to answer that?
I think you have to answer. What does the grant make us do after, basically? So.
Yeah, so the letter of so basically at this point in time, a letter of support and a letter of intent is just being submitted, and they have to invite you back for submittal of a full application.
and it is the full application that commits you to, well, actually, you're not committed to anything until you sign a grant agreement. So at this point in time, the letter of support is basically just supporting that the city supports the project and that there is an intent to move forward if we're selected for the grant fund.
So, and Mr. Niemeyer may want to respond to this. If we authorize this submittal of a letter of support, it's totally non-binding. Is that correct, Chris?
Based upon what Mr. App said, yes, I would agree with that. Until we actually have to sign an agreement with the funding agency, the city is committing to working with the grantor and, you know, following through on these commitments, but legally we're not bound to it until we actually sign on the dotted line.
Okay, great. That's all the questions I had, or the only question I had. With that, I will go ahead and move to public comment. Public comment is now open for item C3. Any member of the public wishing to comment on item C3, please raise your hand now. And Zeke, do we have any public comment?
No, sir. At this time, we don't have anybody in the queue with their hand up.
Okay. Then I will close public comment, bring it back to council for discussion and or recommendation. And Council Member Heller, would you like to start it off, sir?
I have nothing to add except I'm very excited about this opportunity. And Daniel, thank you for taking time to present it to us. And we'll keep our fingers crossed.
Thank you.
Thanks, Councilmember Heller. Councilmember McPherson.
I totally support this submitting a letter of support, and I think it sounds like a great project that would help the city. So I'm in favor.
Great. And Councilmember Addis.
I'm fully in favor of this. It's a beautiful project. It's exciting, and I'd love to see things move forward.
Great. Councilmember Davis.
I move to authorize staff to submit a letter of support for the Ocean Protection Council solicitation of grant proposals for upgrades to Morro Rock parking lot to reduce polluted stormwater runoff the ocean and to make certain city commitments for the project.
Second. I got it in. Motion by Councilmember Davis for the staff recommendation. Mayor Heading seconds. Any further discussion? I'll just add my comment. Daniel, thank you. Damaris, thank you. Staff, thank you for your work. What an opportunity to reduce polluted stormwater runoff potentially for our city, protect our ocean waves and beaches, and educate our public and surfing community about green stormwater infrastructure. Noah Smuckler would be proud of us this evening. With that, I'll ask for a roll call vote.
Councilmember Davis.
Yes.
Member Heading?
Yes.
Councilmember Addis?
Yes.
Member Heller?
Yes.
Yes.
5-0.
Okay. Great. Thank you again, Daniel, for your presentation. Damaris, thank you as well. And thank you, staff.
Thank you very much for your time. Appreciate it.
Bet.
Thank you.
Look forward to seeing you in the future. That brings us to item D for this evening, Council Declaration of Future Agenda Items. Folks, are any future agenda item requests?
I have one.
Already? Councilmember Heller.
So as we move along with the development of the WRF project and Cayucos is getting to the point, I guess, where they're going to go offline, I'm wondering if we should agendize a discussion about what we're going to do with the existing plant and the corporate yard and how that's going to work, whether we need a meeting with the JPA, which we haven't had, I guess, since 2015. I'm just wondering what's going to happen with that whole area right there once CSD goes offline.
I think that's a valid concern from a timing standpoint. Staff, do we have any estimation, just out of curiosity, of what the timing is for that?
Yes, I think the Cayucas plant or the Cayucas side will probably go off the city service sometime next calendar year. It's I don't want to put a timeline out there. It's not for me to speak for on behalf of the CSD there, but I would assume sometime next year, probably around mid-year. Nothing needs to immediately happen as far as the existing treatment plant because we're still moving, you know, going through the process of developing the wharf. But it, as Mr. Heller suggested, it's probably good to start thinking about that and plotting a course for that. So obviously we want to start those discussions prior to the wharf project being completed.
Thanks, Scott. Jeff, I support your agenda item. I do agree. We should get it on the calendar and begin discussions. Any other input?
I support it as well.
Okay. Looks like we have majority support for that. Thank you, Councilmember Heller.
I was just going to say, it sounds like this is something that we would be discussing, or the council would be discussing in the goal setting process, where it would be established as a goal and a priority to work on. Would that be correct? I'm just going to ask the city manager if that's the appropriate place to bring it up.
I think what my recollection is, it's part of an existing objective or action item, sort of looking at our opportunity sites. So it's already been flagged as one of those. So certainly it's just a matter of when is the most appropriate time to have that discussion. And sort of that's in the hands of city council, as well as kind of looking at our capacity at this point. So we certainly could have that conversation in the next couple months, or at least begin that conversation.
Okay. Thanks.
Good. Any other input on that one? Okay. It looks like we have go ahead, Don. I see you keying in. Okay. All right, so we have majority support for that, or unanimous support for that item. Any other considerations for future agenda? Okay, hearing none, that closes item D. The next regular meeting of the Morro Bay City Council will be held on Tuesday, September 22nd, 2020 at 5:30 p.m. via Zoom teleconference. We are adjourned. Thank you. Be safe and be well, and have a great evening.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.